My name's Jeremy, and I get the honor of introducing the most esteemed DYD in the Assemblies of God.
Word.
He's probably led billions to the Lord.
Amen.
Raised billions for Speed the Light.
There's no missionaries in here, right?
He was. This was my DYD when I was a youth, so.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah. So we love Lee Terry. Let's give him a round of applause because he is the man.
Wow, that was awesome. That's too much, man. Oh, gee. Well, hey, guys, thanks for coming. And I want to talk to you today about how to build a bulletproof team. And, you know, one of the things that has been my great pleasure is to build teams and to build groups at Camp Cedar Edge and throughout ministry. I've watched different teams that have been built, and I've been interested how they've done. And that's what I want to talk about, because team building is really something that's it's a lot more complicated than we really would like to think. When you look at team building, there's lots of opportunities for team building in the church. We see that there are staffs. We have a staff, and some people would call that a team. We have other types of groups. Thank you. Awesome. That'll help us be able to hear a little bit better. So let's think about the teams that we do build. Certainly, as I mentioned, we have a staff. You have a board. You have small groups, probably. You may have a special event or volunteers. We've got a volunteer team, or we've got different types of ministry teams. And I don't know about you, but if you've ever been on a team, you know, there are those times that team clicks and you're just feeling like, this is so awesome. I'm just so glad that I'm a part of this team. And then there's those other times that you're on a team and for whatever reason, it doesn't click. And you're just like, wow, this team is not working. And I'm not sure why, but it just doesn't do anything for me. And there's some interesting ideas about why those teams don't click. Let's look at a couple scripture verses here first. See if I can make that. If you want to follow along, it's Genesis 11, 1 through 6. Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. As people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. They said to each other, come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we'll be scattered over the face of the whole earth. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower the people were building. The Lord said, if as one people speaking the same language they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Here's a great opportunity for us to see team in the Bible. So we see that this team, they worked together. They had a plan of assault, which they were going to do. They're going to build a great tower. And they said, hey, we're going to do our best to get this together. And here's just another interesting fact. You heard where it said that they spoke the same language. Okay? Communication is really vitally important to team. We're going to talk about that a little bit more in depth in a little bit here. But I want you to think with me for a minute about the teams that you serve on. Maybe the team that you're involved with. Because that oftentimes gives us an idea of the type of team that we want to serve on, or that we like to create. If you're a creator of teams, maybe you're the leader of this or that. And so those opportunities where we've served on a team often begin to come to mind for us. This is what I want my team to look like. This is how I want it to feel. I want other people to feel this. But one of the things that we really need to do is we need to take a look at what we're doing as a team. And by this, let me just give you a couple examples. So if you were to define the word team, probably everyone in here would have a little bit of a different idea about team. But let me give it a couple tries to give you a couple ideas. So we could think about a marathon. We've got a marathon in people, maybe 40,000 people in the Boston Marathon, and they're a team because they're running for one reason. And they're running for one thing, the goal. All right? So they could be called a team. But, you know, it's interesting because as much as we'd want to call them a team, you know, there's a few things that are missing about that. Because everyone is competing against each other. Do teams do that? When we're in a team, do we really compete against each other? Is that something that happens? So now we begin to start seeing some problems with what we call a team. And that's one of the things that I want to draw your attention to is when we think about a team, the team has to have a couple things that are really important elements. First thing is the team has to have a goal. If a team doesn't have a goal, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know why they're doing it. They don't know where they're going. The second thing is they have to depend on one another. For us to have a team, we have to depend on each other. And finally, they have to have some mutual accountability. That's the third thing. Now, here's the interesting thing. Let me give you a couple fun examples here. So let's think, how many know Tiger Woods and Michael Jordan? Okay, those are two easy ones. Let's just talk about those two because they're world-renowned and everyone's pretty much familiar with them. Tiger Woods and Michael Jordan, one of the things that they said when they turned pro was this: I want to win championships. Okay? Both of them said, I want to win a championship. And the interesting thing about this is that both of them were at the top of their game. I mean, these are extraordinary people that can make teams incredible. So let's think about how each one played out in their team. Tiger Woods, it's interesting. He steps on the golf course to compete. He's not in isolation. He's always part of this group. His foursome or any other golfers competing are part of this group. And, you know, it doesn't matter what the other golfer is doing. Tiger Woods has his own gig. Okay? So here's what I want you to see is sometimes we call things teams that aren't teams. And that's problematic for us. All right? So let me illustrate that a little bit more. Tiger Woods, regardless of what everyone else is going to do, he's going to play his game. Okay? And he's going to do the best that he can. And regardless of what anyone else does, Tiger Woods is going to play his game, and he's either going to win or lose by his own efforts. Okay? So it's not based on a team. Now let's look at the other hand with Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, in 1988, he was named the MVP of the year. He was also Offensive Player of the Year, and he was Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, he was the highest scorer. I mean, this guy did everything that he could, but he still did not win the championship. Why? Because he was dependent on other people in his team. Okay? And that's the thing that's really important for us here, is that when we begin to think about what a team is, it's really important for us to know what a team means to everyone. And let me just give you part of my story. I was on a staff years ago, and I'll never forget, we had lots of great conversations. And I was excited about being on that team. I was excited to hear things like, you know, I could see us staying together as a staff for until we retire. That was one of the things that we said at one point. I remember going to a movie, Black Hawk Down, because it was a team building experience for guys. And we went to Black Hawk Down, and it was like, yeah, team. But you know what? We really weren't a team. You know, what I found out is that there were some things that just didn't jibe with me and them, and we just didn't feel like a team. And that's one of the things that we have to really understand, is that there's really something about a team that's different from a group. But we don't like to call things groups, because a group is not as cool as a team. It doesn't do anything for me inside. But a lot of times, really what we are is we're a group rather than a team. All right? So let me just give you a couple of illustrations about a team and a group. Here's a great illustration. It's easy for everyone to understand. You get onto the elevator as a group, and the elevator breaks down, and you become a team. Everyone gets that. You know, and that's the thing, is that we have to really understand that just because we have a grouping of people doesn't make that a team. And there's something really emotional about being a team. And when we talk about being a team, every single one of us has a different idea of what that team is. And so I really want to encourage you that when you begin to craft what a team looks like or a group looks like, let's really have a good idea of the definition of that so that people aren't misled. And you put your emotions out there, you put yourself in that position of saying, I'm part of this team. And then it's really not a team, it's a group. And you're kind of going, oh, wow, okay, I don't really understand what that is. I have a handout here. Let's go ahead and give this out. We'll give as many out as we can here. Let me have one of these. Thanks. You may have to share a couple. So, once again, I want you to remember that the difference between a group and a team is not just in semantics. It's really about how we make people feel. It's really about how we see this thing perform, whether it's a group or team. Okay? And what I want to tell you as well is that, yes, you can call a group a team. You can call whatever grouping of people you want a team. All right? But the problem comes when you have people who are looking for certain things from teams and they don't find that. And then they become disillusioned, and then the team begins to draw back because it's not what they thought it was. And so calling it something doesn't make it something. Does that make sense? So we have to really think about that. Let's just look at a couple differences here. With a group, leadership is strong and focused. You have let's think about a senior pastor role here, okay? So the senior pastor is a strong, focused leader. He's got his staff under him. That's a group. All right? Whereas a team, there may be a sharing of leadership. Traditionally, senior pastor is a group with his staff. There may be some that function as a team. Maybe you have co-leaders, something like that. But let me give you an example of a group, and you'll see kind of how this works out with staff members especially. So you have, let's say, the senior pastor. He's the leader. And then you have maybe a youth pastor. You have a choir director and a children's pastor. Okay? Well, they're not dependent on each other's success. You know, we're not saying, hey, youth pastor, good job on the choir job over here. You know, if you're failing at your youth pastor job, you're out the door. All right? So this is something that's a group. It's not a team. If it were a team, we'd be going, hey, you know what? Yeah, really great job on the children's pastor's things. Everyone else did a lousy job, but we got one win today. All right? So that's not what we say. So it's really important to understand the difference between group and team. So we can see, that's just an example of the two. We can see that that's definitely a group. Let's look at some other things. Accountability. There's individual accountability in groups where there's both individual and mutual accountability in teams. In a team, we're always looking at how the team is doing, not just at how one person is functioning. The team wins based on how everyone does. The purpose is identical to the organization's mission for a group, but a team can work towards specific purposes. So you may pull a team out. Let's say maybe you have a building project that's going on, and you need to pull a couple people out to say, hey, you know, this is kind of what the purpose of this team is, and this is kind of where we're going on this team. I need to make sure that you know which direction we're going. Let's make sure that we have some things that everyone understands as far as rules and some requirements, those things need to be set out. And you see that with a team. In a group, those are pretty much as the organization's mission is. Okay, let's look at work products. Individuals within the group deliver individual projects where team is collective, communication efficient in board meetings, but yet with teams open into discussion. Wow. You know, this is an area I'm going to talk about a little bit later, but I want to just encourage you. Communication is so important among the team. That's one of the areas that we find huge breakdowns in, is in the face-to-face conversations. We're so used to doing an email or a text or something, and we've forgotten about that face-to-face communication. I could say something to you with my back to you, and it would come out differently than if I were to say something to you face-to-face, all right? Because you can interpret my expressions, you interpret all of those things. So a team is really important for us to communicate well, all right? With a top-down organization, such as a group, we're going to see that that's pretty easy because the pastor or the leader says this and everyone falls into line and no problem. But a team, because a team has different opportunities to interact, we're looking for different people to play a role here. I need to hear from you because the best option is going to come from accumulative knowledge that we have. Does that make sense? Sorry, I'm not keeping up with my my notes here. We need to understand, this is one of the first things that I want to talk about as far as putting together a group or a team. We need to understand what we're trying to accomplish. There really is a science here. If you look up and start looking at teams a little bit and you want to understand more about it, you're going to find that there's a huge science about teams. It's not just about people and their personalities. There really is a lot of science. And one of the things that they talk about with this is that the first time that a group meets, there's huge synergy there because people are excited about being on a team. It's almost like, you know, kickball where, hey, I was picked first, you know, I was picked last. Yeah. But there's synergy there and people are excited about that. And most of us have some ideas about why we're there. Just as if you recall in Genesis where we read, they had direction. And this is so important. There's many studies that have come out that have said to us that the first time a group meets, it's strongly important that we lay out exactly what we're doing and why. Because if you don't do that, then people begin to have assumptions about what they think we're here for. Okay? So the science of team is really important. And I'm just going to say, the same thing is true of groups as well. We want to make sure that with a group, we lay that out. But a team is a little bit different because a team can have many heads. Where sometimes leadership comes from this end or over here, that spectrum. But with a group, leadership comes from the top. Okay, it's always top down. So we want to make sure that we lay out exactly what we're doing and why we're doing that. And as much as we think we may know, it's probably pretty interesting to go around the room and ask of the team that you're working with, why are we here? What's our goal? What are the things that we're trying to accomplish? And you're going to find that there's confusion many times. Okay. One of the other things that we need to talk about is we need to talk about who's on the team. Oftentimes, it's not just a staff member, or we don't say, hey, it's just these five people who are staff that are a team, unless it's a group. And we say, this is the group of people that we have, and we're going to go ahead and utilize these people as our group. But if you're picking people, you need to pick the right people and for the right reasons. And there are a lot of different personalities. When you begin to think about personality types that go in a group, there's been a couple studies, and I'm going to mention a couple later. One particular one was done by MIT, and they used badges. And what they did is these badges, They actually measured interaction, okay? And I'll come back to that in a little bit. But one of the things they measured was the different times that they connected with each other and how many. And so what they found was that those people that connected many times with others were more satisfied in their group than those who didn't. That seems pretty obvious. But what I thought was really interesting about it is that they were able to also look at some of the other factors. For instance, they were able to look at the productivity of that group based on how many interactions outside of the group they had. So for instance, like in our office, we have all these secretaries, okay? They're admins, and it's just fun because they love each other. And I'll just tell you that there are times that sometimes our office gets a little stressed because we're not sure that they're as productive because they're having fun. But what this study said was that the more that they interact, the more they're going to have fun and they're going to love each other and they're going to support each other. Now, here's the important thing. Don't miss this. Is that what it showed was it predicted their productivity because of their interactions. The more fun they had, the more they loved each other, the more they did together, the more productive they were. And I'll just share one example. We're getting ready for district council. And so we have these secretaries that are doing their work, getting all the publications and everything ready. And Renee, my wife, she's my admin. She comes to me and she says, "Hey, I need to go out and I need to help the girls." See, already she's thinking group. She's thinking, you know, about being a part of this team, okay? Because she's saying, "Hey, I want to get out there and I want to help." And what I'm saying is that sometimes what we see as a waste of time can be a huge opportunity for productivity. Because the more we love each other and care for each other, if you look at the high-performing teams, one of the things that you'll see that's different about that is that they care more for each other and they keep each other accountable. Those are things about high-performance teams that are really not there with groups. Remember, a group says, "Hey, this is my job, I'm doing my job." Rather, with a team, "Hey, we all succeed together." And so that was one of the things about the interaction of these tags that was so important, is they were able to track some of these things and be able to say, wow, you know, the more that we see people interacting, the more productive they are. So just because there's talking and whatnot going on, it doesn't always mean that productivity isn't happening. Now let's talk about personalities for a minute. Because when you put different personalities together, sorry, I'm a little bit late on this. When we talk about different personalities, and you can find there's probably different personalities. Personalities that are on the internet that you'll say, okay, well, this one says this, and this one says this. And what I want to say about that is it's not really important, the particular name that they give it. What is important is that you understand that you're going to have different personalities who are on the team. I've got a handout for you of that as well. Let's see. Yeah. Okay. So this is just another... It's another expert, let's just say that, who's given some names to the different kinds of personalities. And let me just talk about the idea of personality types. Just because you have a staff doesn't mean that that staff member necessarily should be on a team. I didn't say group, I said team. Okay? Remember, there's a difference. In a group, it's hierarchical, okay? But in a team is done for a specific purpose. And that's one of the things that we have to look at, is who are the people on our groups, okay? A couple of things that these tags, I'll go back to the tags again, that they were able to find is that as they found people who were satisfied, okay, more people were satisfied with people who just fit together and everything went well. But what they found is that the more satisfied they were, the less they climbed the hill of trying to conquer something more. Because you know what? Hey, we're good. Everything's good. We did our job. Everything's good. So what they found was that if you had a little bit of angst about your job or the things that you were trying to accomplish as a team or as a group, then you're going to work harder because you want to overcome that. All right? So that's one of the things about a team, is that they say that sometimes it's good to have that one person who is just a little bit of a prickly pear for you. And that doesn't necessarily mean that he's an antagonizer or that he's mean or ugly, but it means that it's good to have somebody who challenges the process. You know what I'm saying? Just because I said it doesn't mean it's true. You know, and so somebody who can say, wait, you know, let's talk about that for a minute. What about this? Or what about this? And so there's some other ways that we can talk about that. You know, so let's look at some of the personalities that you're going to have on a team. You're going to have somebody who possibly is the implementer, who turns ideas into practical actions. All right? This guy may be a little bit inflexible. However, he may have difficulty in changing well-thought-out plans. Think about yourself here. See if you find yourself here somewhere. Okay? How about the coordinator who clarifies goals and promotes decision-making? Coordinators often chair a team. They can sometimes be manipulative. Okay? Or the shaper who has the drive and courage to overcome obstacles and shapes others. How about the plant who solves difficult problems and often creative and unorthodox? A plant will come up with ideas but may have difficulty communicating them. How about the resource investigator who explores opportunities and develops contacts? Or the monitor evaluator who observes and assesses what's going on? The team worker who listens, builds relationships, and tries to avoid or reduce conflict? The completer or finisher who searches out errors and omissions and finishes on time, or the specialist who provides knowledge and skill. So let's just think for a minute. Give me some feedback here. Talk to me about the kind of teams that you serve on, and who are the personalities that you have on your team? Do you see some of these that are on your team? Can you relate to some of these? Maybe there's some that weren't mentioned that you can see that are on your team.
Are we allowed to talk about them if they're in the room?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're right there. Jonathan Lang, he's the completer finisher
okay.
of our team.
All right. And what role does that play for you?
I lean on him to keep me in line with timelines.
Yeah.
For detail orientedness, he certainly sees things that I don't see.
Yeah.
You know, and I find that very valuable.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, that prickly pear thing, that's me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. That's good. Yep. Anybody else?
Definitely hard if you have all the same personalities.
Yeah, because this is what we get right here. Everyone's good. Yep. Good. Okay. Anybody else? Yeah, Mike.
I took a survey a long time ago, not in church work, but in corporate work, and I was way out of the quadrant of organizer.
Okay.
Which meant visionary, and I can see things. I can see the job finished. But I'm terribly organized at getting it done.
Yeah.
So I've discovered that, and that's the people I look for just around me.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good. I saw another hand. Yeah.
So he's the implementer, I think. And I see the inflexible and difficulty changing. Like, he's like the big dreamer, you know, so he can take like an empty space and turn it into something amazing.
Right.
But those like little details and the building blocks to get there, like sometimes may or may not work the way that he thinks they should or couldn't, and he has a hard time. Like if someone brings a different point of view, well, you just don't agree with me, you know, so it's
Right, yeah.
You're a naysayer, you know.
Yeah. Good. That's a little inflexible, yeah. Yeah.
The number seven, the team worker, there's one on the team that I'm in who just it's kind of like just the glue of everybody and kind of keeps everybody together when everybody's trying to do their own job. One of the things that she's really good at is just keeping everybody joyful or you know, keeping everybody just kind of together. So that's really valuable.
Right, good. Yeah.
Just commonly, I think it's interesting how different situations or circumstances or an event's going on and different personality types come out. So someone may be implemented here, but then someone may be a resource investigator for something else so they can cross different personalities.
Very good. Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. Of course, everybody in the organization knows who everybody is.
Yeah.
The challenge is helping everybody understand what that means. Which then kind of helps with the bulletproof team see if they can see who they are, but then understand the differences, the pros and the cons. I just think so many times they get labeled and they don't really truly understand what that means to the organization.
Right. Yeah, you know, and that's a really good point. We really need to understand that we need these different personalities. You know, that's not to say that you have to go down the line and go, okay, I need one of these now. I need one of these. Looking for this. But it's to say that we need those different and dissenting personalities, like I mentioned earlier, that help us to kind of shake us from just going down the lane that, hey, this is what we've always done. This is the best way. And no one questions that. All right? So that's an opportunity for us to go, wow, you know, as we have more people who are involved in this, then we have more minds, we have more experiences, more skills, more education, and all those things can come together for the best solution to a problem or whatever that may be. So, anybody else? Okay, good. Hey, I want to move on. One of the things that we have a problem with is we have a problem with talking about how to narrow the team down. Okay, and I am talking about team here because a group is a little different. A group, we can have as many people as we want. Really doesn't make a difference because remember, it's top down. Sorry, you're probably seeing an email of mine. Yeah.
This is Banky's birthday.
Yeah. Yeah. Nate Bank. It's Nate Banky's birthday today, so make sure you say happy birthday. So narrowing the team down. Once again, remember, the elevator is broken. Everyone's on board. Now we're trying to fix the elevator. That's a team. Okay, a group is a grouping of people who are doing the same thing under a leadership. Okay, it's an umbrella. And so with that team thought, you know, we're really thinking about, okay, how big is the team? And what do we do with that? You know, if you have a staff, what are you going to do with that staff to say, yeah, somebody's not on the team? What I'm trying to say here is we really need to think about the reason why we're doing what we're doing. And if it's an emotional thing for us to say that we're on a team, let's find some other ways to feed that emotion. Because it's, as I mentioned to you, of my experience where I felt so disillusioned on that team that I really didn't feel like I was a part. And you're going to find people who are just right there with you on that. So we need to be careful of how we name that and how we talk about it. And then as well, we need to think about the size of our team. The larger the team, the harder it is and the more cumbersome it gets. Okay, the idea size of a team is about 5 to 7 people. That's what they say, is about 5 to 7 people. It really, it's the easiest to handle. It's the easiest to have open and honest talks. And it's a great way to really get to know people more intimately than just with a crowd like this. This would be really tough. Hey, let's do dinner. Well, gee, somebody else is saying, why didn't you do dinner with me? Because I don't have that many nights in the week, you know. So a smaller team is really important. One of the things I want to mention is that not always does a team go well. And there are times that we need to reboot a team. Francis Lincone has something called the five dysfunctions of the team, and I'm partial to one of those things, and that's why I'm using kind of his illustration on that. I'll pull it up here. Wow, that didn't come out very good. But what he talks about is this whole idea of trust. And team building is trust building. Because we're going to be talking about things, we're going to be doing things that really centers around trust. And if we can't trust each other, we're not going to build a good team. So one of the things that I want to mention about team building is this whole idea of trust. You know, have you ever done the trust fall? You know, where you do this, okay, I'm gonna trust my buddy here, you know? Okay, well, I want to tell you, that's far less scary than it is to be in a room with people that you don't trust and to try to bare your soul. You know what I'm saying? When you really want to talk about some things with people, but you don't feel like you have the trust in that room to really address the things that you want to address. So what happens in an organization is then you get these sidebar meetings that are taking place. Hey, Jeremy, come here. Hey, what'd you think of that? You know? Hey, what'd you think of the leader? You know, hey, did you hear this? You know, etc. Instead of having those open and honest conversations in a meeting, whether it's with a group or with a team, we're going to find that it's much easier to go to the side and talk about those things. But if we can be honest and open and we can be transparent in that room and we trust people to know our intention, my intention is not to hurt you. My intention is not to say something that's gossip, but I have a question. Can I ask that question of you? And when we can do that, then we can walk out of the room with one agenda. We can walk out of the room going, hey, you know what? We've cleared the air and everyone is going in the same direction. But when there's that kind of leadership, especially in a group that just says, hey, look, this is the way I want you to think. This is what we're doing. No questions about it. Then we're going to walk out of the room and we're going to talk about it. And we're going to have different opinions about it. And that's going to bring up opportunity for people to dissent from the group, so to speak. Does that make sense? So it's really important for us, as Francis talks about, is to have this this trust that we need to build. Otherwise, there will be an absence of trust. Okay. And the thing that that does is it brings a fear of conflict. You're in the room, you want to say something, but you really can't say something because you don't trust the people there. You feel like this leader, if I say that to him, man, he's going to whack me. Okay? So we want to make sure that we have that trust so that we can talk about conflict. Is conflict bad? I mean, we see conflict in the Bible. You know, there's different kinds of conflict, and it's how we deal with that that is really important. If we keep it in the realm of a godly conflict where, hey, you know what, I have a question. I don't necessarily agree with that. Because we don't agree, is that wrong? It depends on what it is, you know. Certainly, if it's on the infallibility of the Bible, yeah, that's wrong. But there's a lot of other things that, you know, we can talk about that we can disagree about. And so oftentimes those are not things that are wrong. So when we're talking about building a team, we need to be able to have that transparency. We need to be able to have that opportunity to dissent, to talk about these things. But at the end of the day, what needs to happen is as we've talked about it and as we've made a decision about it, then everyone needs to walk out in agreement on that particular plan. Does that make sense? So that way, we're not having these sidebar conversations and continuing on. And that's part of the maturity of a team, is to say, hey, you know what? We've talked about it. We've gave it discussion. And now, that's where we're at. So the other thing is lack of commitment. He talks about the lack of commitment to follow through with those things on a team. That's so important. We've got to have the commitment. If we've laid out some ground rules, we have to make sure that those ground rules are followed. And with a team, mutual accountability. It's okay for you to say, hey, you know what? Man, you're not holding up your end of the deal. Okay, yeah, you're right. As a group, probably not going to happen. Hey, leader, unless you have a lot of trust. Okay? So we could say that if we have trust. Lack of commitment, avoidance of accountability, that's just basically saying, hey, we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. I'm not doing my job. I'm not doing what I'm called to do. And then the last is the inattention to results. That's saying, hey, you know, we're hiding our head in sand. We're not focusing on really what's important here. Anybody want to comment on any of these? I want to give you opportunity, or maybe just ask a question. Please feel free. Yes?
So the idea is that absence of trust is the biggest issue that leads to the other things, or they're all just
effort weighted? That's what he's saying, is absence of trust, it builds upon each other. It leads to those other issues. And certainly, absence of trust, you know, gives you a fear of conflict. Okay, I'm not going to ask this question because I'm afraid of their response or what somebody may surmise from what I said, if that makes sense. Anybody else?
It's a good question for you or for the room.
Yeah.
You know, as far as the absence of trust, if what has been people's proven way of success of keeping the sidebar conversations from happening? Mm-hmm. What have been some practical steps that anybody has taken to help minimize that?
Great idea. Anybody here?
Having a good flow of information, communication between team members.
Okay, yep, that's good.
I think definitely confronting the people that have had the sidebar conversations and saying, hey, why can't we have this conversation as a team? You know, is it because maybe you don't feel comfortable? Are you afraid of somebody in the room, like, not being honorable in what you're saying, or conflict, or whatever? Because I think that's an indication that there's not enough trust in the room if there are a lot of sidebar conversations. Or that people are afraid to be honest because maybe past, I don't know, it's something you always say, past things always predict future things. So they're afraid because this happened before to such and such, I'm gonna not say this to this person because then, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe just acknowledging there's a lack of trust and talking about that as a group. Hey, I know there were sidebar conversations about this. I just want to clear the air and get it out there because I think bringing it into the light is always the best idea.
Yeah, go ahead.
It just seems to me, I mean, most of the time when I've been in a situation like that, I mean, it, as soon as one person actually steps up and bears their soul and is vulnerable and honest, and then the rest of the group has the tendency to follow.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
I think I was on a team this last term in a leadership team, and I think we did lack trust in that team, and every once in a while there would be the sidebar conversations. And I think some of that was based from the team leaders not really creating a great atmosphere of trust. So that's really hard when you're not the team leader and you're trying to not be a part of the sidebar thing. But I think what we found was, like Renee said, you know, the rest of the team is accountable to this as well, and if we can say to another teammate, like, hey, that's not okay. We probably shouldn't be talking about this sort of thing. Like, this, if we've got an issue, we need to bring it up in the team. But I think the original question of, like, how do we, I don't know, for me, it was hard because it's like, well, how do we get back to creating trust when I'm not the team leader? And the team leader is maybe part of the problem. And I don't know.
Yeah, and you know, that's a good point. Our leadership as a team leader really can make the difference. And I think that's part of what I think is that the more that we can become educated as a team leader on these things, the better opportunity we'll have to do with our group. Okay? So if we can say as a team leader or as a group leader, hey guys, you know what, I want you to have transparency. I receive that as long as it's done in a good and a positive way. That's okay. We can have those hard discussions. We need to have those hard discussions. And I think, Scott, the team leader has to be the guy who does that. You know, Because if the team leader is not willing to do that, other people aren't going to usurp his authority. You know what I'm saying?
I just think in organizational ministry, we do really well at saying 95%.
Yeah.
So we haven't quite gotten to this point yet. Some smaller skills we have, but to say, why don't we start with the 5% of what you're not going to say, and then we can go to the 95 that you
want. That's a good point.
You know, how do we flip that? You know, because if we can get to that 5%, that's some meaty stuff.
Yeah, that is. Yeah.
This probably plays into answering the original question, but as a team leader, so you are the team leader, but how do you help field those disagreements that aren't over the infallibility of Scripture? Like, if it's not like a black and white, you're wrong, you're right, but how do you, practical ways on dealing with your team that has disagreements, as the team leader, what would you help to get everybody on the same page?
Yeah, I think one is the organization's core values and vision.
Right, bring everybody back there.
Yeah, I mean, man, core values is so important because I feel like core values direct behavior. You know, so one of our core values was we serve God, and because we serve God, we serve people. You know, God loves people, so we serve people because we love God. And so at Camp Cedar Edge, that's what we did. So that was one of our core values. Somebody was disrespectful to people, we go back to the core value. So that really helps as well. Your organization's vision, those are the kind of things that really help you. Your team or your group's charter, whatever you're talking about, the things that you've written down as your rules, etc. I think, once again, this is here we're talking about, why are we doing what we're doing? Yeah. Know why we have a team and what we're trying to accomplish. That's it. Yeah.
I think it's interesting to point out that, well, one, there's a great assessment that you can find where, you know, you can have your team that is this by dysfunction, so you can, and we did that as a team. I think Linda Bottoms did it with our leadership team, and it was interesting because we talked about it beforehand, like, what do you think are the dysfunctions of our team? And, you know, we all have, you know, well, I think it's lack of commitment, I think it's this. But then when we took the assessment, it was something completely, you know, totally different from like what we thought. And so it's interesting that as a leader, you might think you're at lack of commitment, but your team is actually somewhere different. And so I think there's value in understanding, you know, because if you don't know what the problem is, then if you're trying to fix this problem over here, but this is, you know, then you're going to create even more chaos.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
I think a really good team leader, they know their people, and it doesn't hurt to have a preliminary meeting with the person that you think might have questions, extra questions. Say, hey, we're going to go in, we're going to be discussing this. I just want to get your viewpoint on it because, and please bring these up in the meeting, or maybe I can answer questions for you now. And then when we go into the meeting, say, hey, be open, be very vulnerable and say, we've discussed a lot of these. He had these questions, and now we're going to address them with the team. But do some homework before you come into the main big meeting. If you know people that you know are going to have the big questions.
That's good.
And you could field them before, get them comfortable, or say, hey, let's address them in the meeting. And then the elephant's in the room, man. Let's talk about it.
Good idea. I like that. Yeah, John.
One thing with the church I grew up in is the lead pastor had a unanimous yet concrete anti-gossip policy. So if you were talking about anything that wasn't helping, that was against the policy. And you kind of disqualified yourself from the team if you consistently did that. And he had an amazing team. You know, everybody wanted to be on his team all the time. You know?
Yeah.
But that is, was a serious trust builder, knowing that, hey, if he's on the team, he's not talking about me in any negative light. You know? And if we have to, we can talk about things in the open.
Yeah, good.
That's good.
I would say, too, like, I think I was thinking about these personality types and roles, and somebody made a comment earlier about sometimes people are different roles at different times for different reasons. And I think that's true, especially when you work with volunteers. Because somebody who's a great implementer or a coordinator or something at their 60-hour-a-week job, and they're just wanting to come in and do their 2 to 4 hours of volunteering, they might really slip into more of a phlegmatic, kind of laid-back role than somebody who's going to be that initiator, because they just want to step in and help. They don't necessarily want to be the achiever in that role. But when I think about that first level there, absence of trust, if you think about that, that's really doubt. And so I think one of the best things that I can do as a leader is bring clarity. I think that's the best thing that a leader can get is clarity. Yeah. So when I see a volunteer that's struggling, some things, if it's a group problem, yes, I'll deal with it as a group, but I think one of the failures a lot of times of leaders is to address specific problems with specific people in a general way to the whole group, and then the group will resent you because you're not having the courageous conversation with the individual that you need to have. You're just kind of carpet bombing the group with the correction.
Exactly.
Being like a surgeon.
Yeah. You know, and that's so true. We all probably have said that. You know, instead of talking to everyone, why doesn't he just come to me and say, or to whomever that's about, and just, you know, but it's easier for the leader to do that rather than having to pull somebody out. But I think that's part of the leader's responsibility to deal with the problem quickly rather than letting the group have to suffer and deal with that corporately.
So most likely, if you carpet bomb, that one person that really needs to get it is not getting it.
No.
Anyway, yeah. Everybody else is like,
true.
Know who you're talking to, and that one person's like, huh?
Hey, I just want to put one other thing in here. I didn't really talk about the emotional support of a leader, etc. I didn't talk about that aspect. I really talked about the science of team building and kind of the definition of it. But the one thing that I want to tell you is that the more that you can invest in your people, the more you trust them, the more you can empower them, the more that you can build them up, the more they'll love you and serve you. And that's what I've found is that, you know, as I've invested into the people that have been on my team, I've found that as I was able to do that, they will do anything for me. They will do anything because they see that I truly love them. I care for them. I try to go to great lengths to understand them and just do whatever I can, whether it's praying for them or help to solve their dilemma. And that means the world to them. And so along with that, you find that they're more loyal. They're going to do everything they can to support you and your vision. So that's just really a huge portion that I made really small. You know, if you want to read more about the five appreciations that we can... I can't remember exactly the name of it. It's the five appreciations...
In the workforce.
Yeah, of the workforce, something like that. And it just talks about affirming people in five different ways. Not everyone responds to clapping and standing up. Hey, thank you. Let's have all the volunteers stand up. I'm like... I'll pass, thanks. So there's different ways of doing that, and there's different languages, five languages of doing that. It's similar to the five languages of love, but it's not the same thing. Anyway, guys, team building. I love teams. I love to be on a team, but it's really important that we define the team for people so they understand really what they're doing and why they're there. So I hope you've gotten some good things out of this, and I'm willing to hang out and talk more if you guys have other questions. Love to chat more with you about that. And, like I said, hope this has been beneficial to you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.